all the adversities I've ever faced in my life, right? The death of all the people I've cared about, all the things that I thought were ruining my life that were causing me to want to just blow my own brains out. You know, every adversity that I've ever had in my entire life has been the greatest thing that has ever happened to me up until that point in my life.
You trying to be a street cop?
Welcome to this episode of the Street Cop Training Podcast. I'm your host, founder, and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Bonino, and today we have Joe Malone on the podcast, and he's got a great story, good mission, good objective, and we're going to talk about suicide, and people are, you know, I don't think this is a topic we can cover enough, but I appreciate you being here, Joe. Maybe you could tell the Street Cop audience a little bit about who you are and where you've been and what you've done and where you're at now and what the fuck you're trying to do.
Yeah, thanks, man. I really appreciate, you know, being on the show. I've watched, you know, your episodes, and you had definitely had some pretty heavy hitters on here. So I'm definitely humbled to be a part of that group. My name is Joe Malone. I was raised in Chicago, and I just had some really bad influences at a really early age. Heroin was a huge problem where I grew up, and of course it still is, but like specifically the area, the neighborhood that I was in, there's a lot of heroin traffic through the area. And I just thought that, you know, the 50-year-old sleeping with, you know, the 16-year-old chick that I wanted to sleep with was cool because he was sleeping with her. And that really just led me to this warped perception of what cool was. So I got hooked on some hard substances at a really early age. And, you know, I was able to turn it around, followed my best friend into the Marine Corps. And this was 2006 and eventually became a MARSOC Marine. You know, had a little bit of a broken stint where I worked on an ambulance, but when MARSOC opened up selection, I went back in and, you know, made it through that. In total, I did 7 deployments, all over the world. 3 of those were with MARSOC, and I got to work alongside some really great units, some really great people. But ultimately, when I was leaving the military, I had a really, tumultuous transition, to say the least. I went to the traumatic brain injury clinic and they put me in the outpatient program, and I was going through some legal trouble with my unit. And, you know, it just really led to a lot of pills and a lot of alcohol and a lot of nights where I was holding the gun in my mouth, you know, just ready to, you know, to pull the trigger. And somehow I still haven't honestly even really pieced it all together, but somehow I found a way to build momentum and to get myself out of it. And, you know, it's a kind of a combination of a lot of different things, but my goal is to now help people, specifically veterans and cops, you know, to realign themselves with what I call the true self. You have the actual self and the true self. And I just want to help people get to that true self so that they could live a life that's worth living.
What was the moment in those dark hours that you had a paradigm shift where essentially the pendulum started swinging back the other way? It stopped and you're going a different direction now.
I just got chills. So I remember, so there was one night in particular where I was living in this empty apartment in downtown Wilmington, empty. I mean, literally I had an ottoman that I still keep to this day, actually as a sign, as like a remembrance, but I had an ottoman and a couch and nothing else in this entire apartment. And it was a pretty decent sized one. I just didn't care. I was paying a lot of money, going broke. And I got wasted one night and I was just smashing the doors. I pulled out all my guns and I was smashing them into the wall. And I had this custom made 30-30 lever action. That was a custom made gun from one of my team deployments. And I was just so angry at everybody that, you know, I put it in my mouth and, you know, loaded it up and I was leaning up against the couch and I was going to pull the trigger. And I just started thinking about crime scene cleanup for some reason and how bad I felt for the person who was going to have to clean up the wall that I was about to just splatter my brains all over. And by thinking about that, I just passed out, man. I passed out drunk, woke up to a buddy of mine who knew I was in distress, you know, pulling the gun out of my mouth, pulling my hand off the trigger. And that's when I was just like, dude, this sucks. I don't want to live my life like this. And there was a series of events that took place shortly thereafter where I just was incorporating neuroscience with quantum physics and dudes like Earl Nightingale. I don't know if you ever heard of his recordings before, but you know, him and another dude, Ed Milet specifically, are really what allowed me to build some momentum and start to kind of put things together. But that was like the rock bottom moment.
Can you describe what you were feeling like at that moment, maybe a little more in depth? Did you feel like you lost control when you were loading that 30-30 lever action and it became very blackout for you, where you just didn't even know where you were? It was just this whirlwind of you know, quote unquote, uncontrollable psychosis of some sort. I don't have the right word because I'm not a fit. I've been criticized personally, my own personal life, for not knowing the right psychological terms. So I mean no harm by taking a guess at what I think it might be called. Please don't take offense to that.
No, man, not at all. And that's ridiculous. You get criticized for that. It's whatever. It's weird, man. It's because everybody's story is unique. What brings them to that point? You know, I had a lot of guilt. A lot of survivors' guilt. I felt betrayed. So I was really angry at a lot of people. And I felt like alone, like really, really alone. And even though I was wasted, drunk, I was like really cognizant. I mean, I still remember exactly what I was doing that night, even though I was technically like blacked out, wasted. I'm sure I forgot a lot of it. But I remember very clearly how I felt in that moment. And I remember, I think that's kind of like one of the, you know, I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, but I remember very distinctly just not wanting to feel that way anymore. And I didn't see a way out of it. Kind of like the circumstances of life had confined me to a particular, you know, area of movement. And that was really the only, I don't know, you know, in hindsight, it's hard for me. There's no logic behind it, right? It's just all this emotional baggage bullshit. But I remember very clearly what I was doing that night. And I remember I just wanted to kill myself.
A lot of people who share their story of being on the brink of suicide essentially seem to get to that point where the gun is in their mouth and they just don't pull the trigger. So why do you think at that moment, by the way, I don't know if people have seen this and I haven't talked about this in a long time. There was a story of the gentleman who jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge and lived. Have you ever seen this one? It's really, really good. It's on YouTube. I suggest everybody take a look at it. But one thing he said was, and I think about this all the time, not that I'm suicidal, but I'm very compassionate to people who would be in so much pain that they're considering ending this beautiful existence, because it can be beautiful. Even if it's not at the moment, you can get there. And you've got to understand that, like, it's just not going to be completely easy at all times, but there are moments in life that are worth it. This past weekend was worth it for me. I spent my weekend with my children. I had a fantastic time with them. Just fantastic. But he said as soon as he jumped, he regretted it. The first thing he thought is that he can't believe he did it. I wonder why. And you hear that a lot from people who survive suicide attempts. As soon as it happened, what do you think happens at that moment when you're so close? What's a realization at that point of like, let's take away the crime scene thing. There's got to be a little bit more to it. What else do you think is going on in somebody's brain at that time?
Yeah, it's so I've learned a lot about this. And I feel like I have a pretty good understanding based on the neuroscience and the way that we process information in our brain. You know, and keep in mind, this is going to be very simplified. I am not a neuroscientist, but I live my life studying it now. So when we process information, it comes into the emotional center of the brain first and foremost. And in that emotional part of the brain, it happens to decide, is something a threat or not a threat? And if it is a threat to our well-being, causing death or great bodily injury or something like that, even little bodily injury, then the brain sends that signal to the primitive part of the brain, you know, like the basal ganglia area is what it's called. And whenever it's in that basal ganglia area, that activates the sympathetic nervous system, that fight or flight response, or the autonomic nervous system, either the parasympathetic or the sympathetic, which is the fight or flight response. And when that happens, the brain's two main priorities are to conserve energy and to keep us safe from harm or death. And so it goes into override, and then we start to rationalize with ourselves, you know, hey, I feel bad for the crime scene guy, or man, I really regret doing this. Why? Because I know that it's about to kill me or cause great bodily injury. And I think that's why people who end up killing themselves, usually it's not like the first time that they thought about it or got close to it or attempted it. Usually they do it repetitively many times. And what that does is that ultimately that conditions the brain to accept kind of like the next inch forward, the next inch forward. Law enforcement and military deal with this all the time. Whenever we're training for combat or violent engagements, your first time doing it, you're going to be pretty amped up, like your first real time doing it, even in training. But the more you deal with drunk assholes and the more you deal with being shot at, you know, eventually you can override that automatic flight response, and you could overcome it with a fight response. Unfortunately, for people who are suicidal, that fight response ends up being they pull the trigger or they kill themselves in some way.
I mean, I ask that because I speak of that story from YouTube. You should really watch. Really good about that kid. First thing, I always think about that. First thing he thought as soon as he took the leap is that he regretted it. Immediately. It was an immediate regret. So just think about how many people can't, once they make the decision, can't turn back time. And, you know, I think that if anybody's having thoughts like this out there, think about the pain you're going to put your family through. It's not fair to selfishly bestow and burden somebody with that kind of emotional pain for the rest of their life, where there are so many options in today's modern world, and to try to find something that will resolve some of the issues that you're facing. And yeah, life is hard, but I also think it's also a blessing. And there are so many ways we can look at this, but certainly I know that there are people, sometimes this works, sometimes it doesn't, but I often say this to people because it's not everything, but it's something to think about. I know people right now that have terminal cancer and have 3 weeks left, and they wish they had your health. So with that gift of life, why would you jeopardize it when there's so much more work to be done on behalf of you? And even if you change your whole life, and I say this sometimes in class, even if you decide to go to Key West and be a bartender and make $120 a day and live this simple life in a hut, but you're happy, your life doesn't have to look like everybody else's life. And that's the beautiful thing about life. You could do whatever you want. And people say, well, I have kids. I have that. Understandable, right? You have responsibilities. But if the things that are causing you this much anguish continue to haunt you, you know, maybe it's time to put some thought into, maybe my story doesn't have to be this way. Like, next question for you is, what's the first thing that after you had this moment and you start swinging back, and the pendulum starts moving back, momentum in the opposite direction, that really spoke to you? Yeah. Was there something that affected you and had a profound impact on you that helped you push in that direction?
Yeah. So, it kind of ties into what you just said, where it's like, my life doesn't have to be like this. And I was on my way out of the military. Like, there was no way I was staying in anymore. I had passed that point of reenlistment. And I didn't want to anyways, man. I'm so sick and tired of supporting bullshit allies all over the world that don't give a shit and then turning our backs on the ones that do. Different story for another time. I knew that I needed to change something and that my life could be whatever I wanted it to be, because I lived many different lives up until the point when I went in the military. I mean, I was, I've backpacked across Alaska. I've, backpacked across parts of Asia. I was a drug addict, as a teenager running around the streets of Chicago doing really shady stuff. I was a MARSOC Marine. It's like, obviously I could do anything that I want to do. So what do I need to do in order to stop feeling the way that I'm feeling? And the first thing that I knew without a doubt was I needed to stop drinking. Drinking was just like, that was it, man. And when did I drink? I drank at night. It was like about 7:30 PM was when I couldn't take it anymore. The demons came out and I would start to drink. So in order to stop that, I started going to bed at like 7 o'clock every night at this time. And I did take sleeping pills. I was on 24 medications at one time with the traumatic brain injury clinic. I don't think I needed a vast majority of those. So anyways, I'm not a huge fan of meds, but they do have their purpose, I think. And so at this time I was taking sleeping pills. I don't anymore, but, it knocked me out. And I would get up at like 3 a.m. and I don't feel like drinking at 3 a.m. And I'm like looking at my phone and there's nobody on Facebook, nobody on texting me because it's 3 a.m. And so I don't know how I fell across Earl Nightingale's teachings, but Earl Nightingale was a radio dude from back in the 50s, 60s and stuff like that. And he talked a lot about the book Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. And what they were saying made a lot of sense to me because I was going through the traumatic brain injury clinic program at that time. So I was learning all about neuroscience, what was going on in my brain, why I was behaving the way I was behaving, erratic, why I was going through some of these physical, symptoms and that I was experiencing. And it really just lined up. The message lined up. And it kind of just built momentum, dude. It started with going to bed early, stop drinking, getting up early. And so it wasn't really like a one particular moment, other than the fact that I was like, dude, why are you going to kill yourself when you might as well just, be a bum and travel across the world and give something a shot before you just erase it all. Really just, finding out what was messing me up the most or when the time was, changing that, going into habits and, building momentum and learning new things and literally becoming a new person. Cause that's what happens when we learn new skills, our brain changes and we physically become a new human being. So,
how do you feel about your life today?
Oh man. I can't believe, but I can't believe that I was in that position. It's crazy how we just attach to things because we're emotional creatures, right? We receive information to the emotional side of the brain 2 times faster than the logical parts. That's why we always respond to things emotionally. But my life today, dude, is remarkable. I'm sitting out here in Austin in this beautiful, high rise looking out. I got a beautiful son now. I have a beautiful, amazing, awesome wife. We've got a great, awesome, crazy dog. The fact that I found a way to connect with people and provide them with value and purpose in their life. That's the biggest thing. And I think a lot of law enforcement struggle with this when they get out the job. I think a lot of military struggle with this when they get out the job, paramedics, firefighters, is that you're providing such immense purpose and value and you're so important in that moment. And when you get out, you don't have it anymore. So being able to provide all that stuff, it's an elated experience. And I can't even believe I would ever even think about ending it abruptly.
Do those thoughts ever come back now?
Oh man. It's like when I was using hard drugs. So I don't, people say if you're ever an addict, you're in recovery forever. And I say that's bullshit. I don't think about using hard drugs at all anymore. I've had heroin in bags in my hand. Like that's disgusting to me. I don't want anything to do with that stuff. So I'm not an addict always in recovery. That's bullshit. And you don't have to be either if you're struggling with substance abuse or addictions. If porn is like a big one these days, you don't have to be an addict in recovery all the time. That's bullshit. Same thing goes for like the suicidal ideations, man. No way. Now, the question I guess would be, well, if I experience like immense life hardship, I have experienced immense life hardships, man. It's been a roller coaster ride up and down since I got out of the military. I was literally homeless, living in a tent on a beach, Onslow Beach on Camp Lejeune, North Carolina for like 3 weeks. Then I was living out of my truck for 4 months. So it wasn't like this was an amazing, everything's been up and at 'em ever since. I've lost my entire life savings 4 times since I got out of the military due to like high risk trading, bad investment choices, and trying to do all sorts of other crazy stuff with it. But to answer your question though, it's I operate on a much higher vibrational frequency at this point in my life and in my existence, and there is no going back. I don't care what happens. There's no way I could ever go back.
I think there's something to be said about maybe the psychology, genealogy, whatever it may be, about somebody who might have a little bit of an addictive or obsessive personality. You're talking to one. I mean, I just am. And when you brought up heroin, I bring up smoking. In my mind, people can't believe that I used to smoke cigarettes. I did. Even for me to fathom that today is wild, especially given the context of how I live my life versus how I once did. I remember I met a friend of mine who is the husband of a woman that I know, and we got deep one night and I didn't know he had a gambling problem. So I said, I've been going to therapy for gambling, the young guy too. And I said, really? You know, tell me about that. He said, what we learned in therapy was I understand that I'm always going to be obsessive and have these addictions or addiction-like personality. And I could be completely wrong in this, but I said, well, what does that mean? He goes, how do you deal with it? He goes, well, there's good addictions and bad addictions. He goes, but I have to accept that I have an addictive personality. I also think that I have some kind of obsessive personality, some addictive personalities. And for me, I'm constantly trying to understand the psychology of why Dennis Bonino acts the way he does. It doesn't mean the sense of a misbehavior. I'm talking about just my behavior in general. What drives why I do the things that I do, good or bad? And can I understand where that comes from? So with that being said, do you think there's some truth to that to that statement? And again, I'm just having a conversation. I don't know. I'm not saying I'm right, you're wrong, or vice versa, or both right. And have your obsessions shifted? Do you recognize that about yourself?
Yeah, that's a really great question and a really great point that you make. And I mean, I could be right. I could be wrong too, right? I'm not like a professional, you know, if licensing means something to you, I'm not licensed in any of this stuff. I'm just a dude who speaks from a lot of experiences. And I think that human beings are just hardwired to be driven. And, you know, we could label things as obsession or obsessive, but I think that the drive behind it all is just to, you know, there's certain neurochemical dispositions in the brain that are associated with like accomplishment and reward. You know, dopamine's the big one everyone talks about these days. Serotonin's another one. Oxytocin, if you're dealing with human beings. And when we get these floods of chemicals, it tells the brain, hey, we're in a high vibrational frequency. We're in an elevated state. We want more of this because this is pushing us forward. We're finding motivation in these behaviors. We're getting this reward neurochemically. And the way that society is structured, I think we really suppress a lot of our natural God-given instincts and talents. And that happens to bleed out in a lot of negative ways, whether it be, you know, gambling or, you know, drugs or alcohol, smoking, whatever. But I think that when you do replace them, you know, so at this point, I don't even know if I would really call it addictions, or like an obsessive type of behavior, I guess maybe obsessive, but yeah, it's really just good and bad, right? Positive and negative. And when you're working towards something that's positive, you're always going to have sacrifices, whether it's enough time with the family or enough time with your friends or your sleep, whatever, it doesn't matter. But life is made for us to sacrifice. And I speak specifically a lot in the context of men because I'm a man, but it really goes for women as well. I mean, you look at a woman who becomes obsessive over her child's safety and nurturing it, you know, they lose everything, you know, their body, their time, their sleep, their individuality. And with men, you know, it's usually driven towards something outside of the tribal area, right? Like, you know, hunting, you know, going to war, combat, the work, you know, finding ways of growth for the family and sustenance to be provided. And so, yeah, sure. I mean, if you want to label it as like a positive addiction or addictive personality, that's great. But I just think human beings are wired to be driven and to really be accomplishing great things all the time and receiving that neurochemical disposition in the brain due to success.
What is the most difficult thing that you've endured? You know, because we've talked about a lot of things that were difficult for you. So talked about being homeless, being on the beach, and then living out of your truck, and then, you know, even this moment and this brush with possibly taking your own life. But let's talk about something that was a little less in your control that you had to endure. So could be, to give a little context, the loss of a significant family member. You know, you talked about losing your life savings, things you can recover from, but these things that we don't know life is going to throw at us. And when it does, I mean, it is literally a uppercut and then a smash to the face. What is one thing you could think was, and then here's the great news. After you unpack this, we get to go into one of the best things that ever happened to you. So I want you to put a little thought into the first one, because the other side of it is going to be completely polar opposite. So I want to go there to hear that and then go to the other side to hear the other thing.
Yeah, you know, there's like a lot of things that initially like come to my head. You know,
you can name two or three if you'd like. I mean, that's fine.
I mean, yeah, I'll try to keep it as succinct as possible, but there's, you know, it was really rough. I didn't leave the military on good terms, not at all. And in fact, I only talked with probably like four people out of all the dudes I worked with, you know, and that really messed with me a lot for a long time and really messed with me a lot. I think I'm, you know, basically over it for the most part now, but that was something that I just didn't understand, why those relationships were breaking down. So that was pretty rough. And then, you know, losing people is, you know, if you consider losing people, because I believe that energy, you know, cannot be created nor destroyed. And so therefore they're technically still with us. But when you can't help somebody who's helped you. So for example, and it's crazy that you're asking that question. I knew there was a reason I chose this day to do the interview. Because it's been 5 years since he died today. So when I was a kid, I told you I was like using a lot of drugs, and my best friend, John, he never got into like the hard stuff with me when we were kids. I kind of went a little crazy with it, and he really wasn't all about that life. And then, so he ended up going into the Marines, and literally 1 year later from the day that he joined, I was like staying with his family for a little bit in high school. And, I went out to California to see his Marine Corps boot camp, and I'll never forget that day. Super profound experience. That's when I quit everything. Like, that's when I quit my hard drugs. I turned to his little brother, Justin, and I had two full packs of cigarettes, and I handed them both to him. I said, "Hey, man, I'm done." And he was like, "What do you mean?" It's like, "Well, I'm going to join the Marine Corps." Because I saw the change that it did to him. And, I was like, man, like, that's something that I want to be a part of. Plus, I didn't want him to go to, you know, war and, you know, not be there. You know, we'd been through everything else together. And he helped me a lot in the process of, you know, quitting these hard substances. And when he got out of the Marines, he always suffered with like some scoliosis issues, some back issues. And then the VA immediately, I remember I was just so, I was floored and how quickly they just threw pain pills at him. And, you know, pain pills turned into heroin, and heroin, you know, ultimately took his life. And as he was going through that process, I just remember feeling like so torn that I couldn't help him like the way he helped me. You know, I was gone. I was deploying. I was in MARSOC at this time, so I was never home, let alone capable of even finding him. When I would be home, because, you know, he's out running in the same streets and the same areas that I used to be running around in, you know, when we were kids. So that was a pretty, that's probably been one of the most difficult things in my life, was just, I mean, because this went on for years, you know, it wasn't just like, you know, a couple months or a year, it was years and years. And so, it was like, I was watching him, you know, fall further from himself, and I was basically helpless to do anything. And then you get frustrated with, you know, family members, people you love, when they're going through these types of situations. But again, he helped me out, and he basically, you know, he saved my life. I don't think I would have survived much longer. I had 9 friends overdose and die from the time when I joined the Marines, or from the time I was 16 until now. So I don't think I would have really survived if it wasn't for him.
Hey guys, if you're enjoying the Street Cop podcast, do us a favor and give us a review on iTunes or Spotify, wherever you're listening to us. Tell a friend. We don't charge anything for the episodes. We appreciate your support. Check us out on any social platform by putting into the search bar Street Cop Training. Give us a follow. We have a lot of free content coming out every single day that you might not catch here on the podcast, and it's important for you to be able to do your job more professionally, and we also entertain you as well.
Sometimes we want people to hear us so badly, but they just don't. We had a podcast episode filmed in here on Friday, and that was the conversation I had with two therapists that sat inside, and another person who joined us via Zoom. And I said, you know, what do you do when you can't get through to people and they don't understand it? I said, well, you're not a mental health professional. You're not equipped for it. And that's not your job. So all you can do is say that I'm here for you. I understand, and have a lot of compassion and no judgment, and just sometimes sit with somebody and just be the shoulder that they can lean on. So you can't beat yourself up for something you couldn't control. That was his story, his life, and you actually had no relevance or no input, or it wasn't your fault. You know what I mean? Like it had nothing to do with you. And that's something you gotta make peace with. It's a hard thing to do when you're going through trauma, to try to figure out how did this happen? Why did this happen? What could I have done differently? And you know what's crazy? At the end of it, you're like, oh, that's right. I couldn't have done anything. Right. I did everything I could.
No, it's very true. And you know, I still don't know. Like, so I have a lot of contention with therapists and HR reps, especially when I work with companies. Cause I don't know, man, like, do they need another shoulder to cry on? Maybe some people do, but you know, for me, I needed a swift kick in the ass, like that didn't come from my father and came from somebody else who could direct me with, you know, intention to a greater purpose in life. And I, you know, I look back when I was using, and it's just like, man, you just don't have all my life's problems have always been derived out of the fact that I was purposeless. And I had no purpose. And I don't know. So, you know, maybe some people do need it. Maybe some people don't. I definitely understand though, there's only so much you could do for another human being. You know, if the horse doesn't want to drink, then they're not going to drink.
Did you anticipate that one day you would hear or receive the phone call that your friend had passed away? And then when it happened, tell us about that.
Yeah. I did. And then there was a brief time where I didn't, because he was like, I'll never forget. He called me. It was 2017. And I got a phone call on a random number from Chicago. I answered it. And he was like, Joe. And it was like, I hadn't heard my friend for years, you know, about like 5 years at this time, maybe four. And so when he sounded like himself again, a lot of people who deal with alcoholics know like the tone of their voice. They're like, oh, they've been drinking. Like, you can tell when they've had one sip of alcohol. It was like the same with drugs. You can tell when they've had one little bump of drugs. And that summer, I thought he was going to be good. But then shortly after I deployed, he started to deteriorate. And I'm not saying he deteriorated because I deployed. It just, that was what the timeline was. And after that, I kind of did expect it again. And then, I got it. It was about like a 2 or 2:30 a.m. I got the phone call.
Who called you?
It was his sister, who is not my wife. So that's kind of... kind of funny to me. She called me and, you know, she was hysterical. It was just a horrible time. He was a really good dude. Like, I don't just say that about people when they die. I've met plenty of people who died and man, that guy was an asshole, but still not that I like wished it upon anybody, but he was just always like the really positive dude, always trying to bring people together. Cup always half full type guy. So it was like a genuine, like, man, like a real genuine loss. But, I just knew that I was going to have to be there for the family and, to help out with like, you know, his funeral and stuff. So I basically just kind of like compartmentalized my emotions. And from that point, and then just, kind of went into like a tasking mode. So yeah, it was pretty shitty.
Have you unpacked those emotions yet and dealt with them?
Yeah. I mean, you know, to a lot of degrees, but you know, it's weird the way that the brain works, right? Because you have these like pathways that are so solidified that, you know, even if you're not using them for a long time, you know, cause when you stop doing things a certain way or thinking a certain way, it's called neural pruning or neuroplasticity. And it's basically like you stop feeding information to those pathways in the brain. So they start to fall apart and die and crumble. And every now and then though, because it's like, I always liken pathways in the brain to like a trail in the forest. When you're learning a new skill or developing a new thought or belief system, it's like, if you walk through a tall grass forest and then you walk out one time, you'll see like the remnants of your trail there, kind of like a game trail almost. If you don't come back to that trail, or if you don't repeat that skill, or if you don't repeat that thought process multiple times every day, well, what's going to happen? It's going to quickly get overgrown. But when you do think a new way, or you do develop a new thought process, or new thought pattern, belief system, habit, skill, and you're walking up and down that trail every single day, we're going to leave a dirt path. So now it becomes a more solidified neural pathway. Eventually, you could take an ATV through it. Eventually, you could pave it, cars going up and down it. And so the pathways that I have associated in my, you know, experiences with John was, you know, that stuff was like a super highway. I do believe that, you know, he's present. I do believe all people who have passed on from their physical form are present. You know, John, again, being like the dude he was, I remember it was really awkward for me one day when he goes, you know, out of all the people who, just so you know, man, I mean, I think he kind of like picked up on something or whatever, but he was like, out of everybody I know, I would love for you to, you know, I'd be happy if you married my sister because I know you would treat her right. And it was just like a really awkward conversation because I was like, all right, man, well, you know, sure, you know, you say that, but so we were never really romantically involved. And then after I got out, our first like date, we were on our way to a 311 concert. I was wearing this like stupid Hakuna Matata, goofy like tank top. I was wearing like a party flannel or a party fanny pack. And we're driving on the highway and I saw a woman on the highway. Something was wrong with her. So I pulled the car over. She's like, you're nuts. And this woman was having a seizure on the side of the highway in July, super hot. And she ended up going into cardiac arrest. And so I'm sitting there giving her the worst CPR I've ever given somebody before. I mean, she was older and she just had a lot of buildup coming out of her. And it was definitely not first date, you know, material. But right after that, we went to the concert. And yeah, so anyways, this is just a little story.
That's a really fucking crazy story, dude. Just so we're clear, you really lightly touched upon how fucking insane that is.
Yeah, it was, she's seen me literally have to do everything, you know, and a guy on my plane last week just had a heart attack, dude. I don't know. Like, I just feel like but he survived, by the way. He's doing good. His daughter actually hit me up. It's like weird how I like attract this stuff. And she's literally seen me do and be involved in so many different things. The only thing she's never seen me do is actually take somebody's life. And I hope she never does. But she's literally have to see me do just about everything else under the sun in terms of medical. I mean, I've had to give her Heimlich maneuver two times where she was literally choking, like going down. Our son was choking. I had to give him you know, it's that lady died. I think she watched another person. I lose track these days, but
Jesus Christ. All right. So yeah. Shifting gears, the best thing that ever happened to you.
Man, you know, just, you know, it's kind of weird because I believe adversity is the best thing that ever happens to you. And so, and I agree.
I just want to jump in, Joe, and say, I agree. It fucking blows to go through a hard time in your life, but man, on the other side of it, you just become this wonderful, and I hate to use a butterfly, but like you're in this cocoon, you come out like this and you just come out with so many more skills and you're just so much more confident and so much more relaxed and so much more understanding of things. And, you know, I run a business and it's successful to some degree. And it really, you know, as you go through these things, these tough lessons, these very adverse times, it makes you somebody that you never thought you could be when you survive them. So I agree with you there. I don't mean to take it, but continue on. I didn't mean to interrupt. My apologies.
No, it's important to resonate with those types of, you know, people who are on that same frequency because, you know, adversity, and this is, I'm not going to go too far into it, but the biggest reason I think we see a lot of violence, active shooters these days is because we're removing all the adversity from our kids, from our workplaces, from one another. We're just coddling each other, treating each other like a bunch of bitches, and rewarding people for that. And so, you know, in conjunction with that statement there is, you know, the best thing that's ever, you know, happened to me, and I didn't game this at all. It just kind of was coming to me, but you know, is John, you know, his death, the death of my best friend and, you know, the death of all, or the, all the adversities I've ever faced in my life, right. The death of all the people I've cared about, all the things that I thought were ruining my life, that were causing me to want to just blow my own brains out. You know, every adversity that I've ever had in my entire life has been the greatest thing that has ever happened to me up until that point in my life. And the reason behind that, I mean, losing all your money, like everything, dude. And it wasn't just my money. I'm talking, I went like $200,000 in the hole with no way to come back out of it. It's like, who are you when all of your resources are completely depleted? You know, and as a man, that's really important, because in America, especially, we have everything provided for us. We have all these lattes. We bitch when the milk isn't hot enough in your fucking Starbucks. Don't get me wrong, I've been there too, man. But like, we are just so soft with everything being provided for us all the time. We're removing all the resiliency, removing all the adversity. And, you know, I was telling somebody a few weeks ago, I was like, you know, Mike Tyson became a boxer, and I could be off about this a little bit, but because he was picked on, he was bullied. Somebody killed his pigeons one day and he beat the shit out of them. Like, the world's greatest boxer up to that point in time, you know, Ali, you know, varying, but one of the best ever, Mike Tyson, he would have never been born had he not been bullied and faced with adversity. And so, you know, as sad and gut-wrenching and terrible as the horrible things in my life have been, and, you know, specifically the death of my best friend, it at the same time has been the greatest, you know, thing. Not the fact that he's gone, but just the adversity that I faced in dealing with it and coming out on the other side.
Isn't it amazing to think that maybe you get this one person, maybe two people in your life, but for now, just one who was such a gift when they were here. After they're gone, the presence John must have brought is fantastic. I mean, literally led you to your marriage, to your child. So to remember John as such a profound human being, even when he faced demons that he could not conquer himself, it's really amazing that you guys continue to honor him in the way that he deserves it. And, you know, I didn't say this earlier, but I am sorry for his passing, but it seems like his passing has brought a lot of great things, and that's probably what his life was meant to do. So really a nice thing, as weird as that may sound, but it's a gift that you even got to experience it.
Yeah, truly, man, truly. And you know, it's really what, it's one of the major driving forces that, you know, keep me doing what I'm doing today and trying to connect with people who are dealing with, you know, adversity, regardless of what it is, and maybe just don't know how to develop a system to get themselves through it. But yeah, man, you know, every day, like I said, I believe that all people or energy is, you know, it's present. So
who do people tell you look like the most?
Man, I get all sorts of, I actually get somebody said something to me a few days ago. Oh man, I don't even want to say it, cause I hate when people say it. Cause the dude's name is the same name as me. But he's a creep. He's like a straight up creep. Why, what were you going to say?
From the front, Hugh Jackman, the whole fucking time. I just see Hugh Jackman nonstop.
Oh, that's cool. Agree? Yeah. That's actually one of the best ones that I've ever, somebody did say that to me before, especially when I grow my beard out, I get like a little passion.
From the front, you are a fucking dead, doppelganger for Hugh Jackman.
I'll take that.
That's a good one, bro. I didn't say like Pat Sajak, you know?
No, it's not. Hugh Jackman's a really good one, that's for sure.
Who was the other one that somebody told you?
Well, I don't want to ruin it now because I'm going to say it and people are going to be like, oh, that's what I see now. So I'm just going to...
No, it's here. I got it. You got to tell me now.
No, I'll tell you offline. I'll tell you off camera.
Okay, fair enough. He wants to stick with the Hugh Jackman. Yeah, I mean, I usually get Brad Pitt myself. That just happens all the time.
I figured. I wasn't even going to say it because I just knew.
Yeah. I wonder if people who are like really completely off the spectrum of being attracted to another human being even make jokes like that. You know what I mean? Like, I wonder if a dude is like just some big sloppy mess, like, I get confused for Brad. If they're funny enough to deal with the fact that they look nothing like Brad Pitt.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think that's, you know, I think we justify a lot in our lives, especially again, as men, and women too, but in American society, you know, it's so easy to justify laziness. And you know, everything is depression or mental or emotional illnesses. And I'm not saying that, you know, to some degree they don't really exist, but quite honestly, I think that a lot of it just has to do with a lack of identity, self-identity. And this is like the nexus of everything I teach, man, is that you have your true self, which is like your maximum potential of what you could do in this life, in this world, in this amazing, beautiful gift you've been given. And then you have your actual self, which is like every promise that you make to yourself that you break, everything you know you're supposed to do that you don't do, just starts to draw you further and further away from your true self. And all this space in between, man, is all angst, anxiety, depression, anger, resentment. And so, you know, it's, I think if people would just be honest with themselves, and I just say this from experience, man, I've lied to myself plenty of times. When my son was born, I kept justifying to myself that I was going to the gym still. I was basically getting fat and weak slow, you know, like that's what I was doing. I wasn't really working out. I was just becoming stupid slow. And, man, recently I just had a pretty good gut check reality. Been on my first diet ever in my whole life, actually monitoring, like, you know, my macronutrients. And dude, I was consuming so much fat, and I'm a healthy eating dude, man. Like I'm a very healthy eating dude. I haven't had McDonald's in like 15 years, you know, that kind of guy. And I lost like 18 pounds in the last 3 weeks just by monitoring the things that I was ingesting into my body. And it's just because I was being honest with myself. And I was like, dude, you look like a fucking fat, weak piece of shit. So I don't know if I'm supposed to be swearing like that on this, but.
Yeah, no, of course, dude. That, honestly, I wish I could isolate that clip, and that should be like everybody's. It was flawless, dude. And it was the truth and more profound than I've ever heard it in my life.
Yeah, I actually, it was a combination of two things. Well, three things, really. And I don't know if have you ever heard of. One was I was playing with my dog, and my dog's a Dutch Shepherd. So I do some like attack training with him, and, you know, he's like locked on, dude. His dog is just like squared the fuck away. And I was recording some footage, and I like saw a side shot of me, and I was like, dude, like, what the fuck is that? And because, again, I've always been a pretty athletic guy. And then the other was I ran across some old deployment pictures, and I was like, bro, like, am I not this jacked anymore? And I was just like, that in conjunction with Wes Watson. Have you ever heard of him?
I haven't.
So check him out. Dude's definitely, he's a legit guy, man. From, you know, from what I've seen, what I've learned about him when I've talked to him, he's a pretty legit dude, huge on fitness, man. And honestly, bro, it was like listening to him, these two photos, these images, I was like, dude, I am fucking weak. I am being a bitch, and I'm justifying things to myself. And hey, we all do that as human beings, because what's the brain's main objective? Keep us safe from death and harm. And then also to conserve energy. The brain doesn't want us to burn energy, dude. So that's why it's like so difficult. But, you know, going back to your point and obtaining, you know, optimizing excellence, I never want to. Yeah, I'm in the 1% of America, the fattest nation in the history of the universe, like straight up. Like, I don't want to be the 1% of that. I want to be the best version of me that I could ever possibly be. And, you know, it does come down to not comparing yourself to other people. It's always, you're your biggest competitor.
And it's important. People will, of course, soften that up. Oh, you shouldn't be so hard on yourself. Oh, I'm going to find some other person to be fat with, and we'll make it all okay. Right. We'll all get our feet hacked off together.
Dude. And, you know, it's like, you look at the world, man, and like the places that I've been, you know, it's just mind blowing how we think this is the world. America is not the world. The rest of the world is brutal, where they literally are hacking people's feet off, hands off, killing families. Like, you know, even here in America.
I meant in a diabetic way, just so we're clear, Joe. I meant in a diabetic way.
Oh, okay.
Your military PTSD is really shining through at the moment, my friend.
I thought you meant like figuratively, like hacking feet off.
I'm talking about like toes first, right? I'm talking about like nerve failures.
You know, that's a real problem too.
Bro, listen, you got to bring that one to your therapist immediately. That one was a fucking, that was an explosion of like, we're not killing people today, Joe. Can we just be fucking clear on that?
No, man, it's, but it, you know, it is a reality. Like, you know, I always tell people, and I do like a lot of firearms training. So when we're talking about home invasion and using lethal force for home invasion, and some people are like, well, I don't think I'll ever get invaded. You know, America is so well set up, the emergency response system, thanks to the men and women in uniform, law enforcement, paramedics, firefighters. Like, you could literally have like a vehicle accident with a fatality, and it's cleaned up and gone in less than an hour. So we're so ignorant to the fact of how many, you know, unfortunate circumstances or atrocities take place around us consistently that we think they don't exist. I mean, I always tell people, talk to a 911 operator. And if you're a 911 operator listening to this, mad respect. I love you men and women because you deal with like some serious stuff. And they don't get told that enough. But talk to a 911 operator and see how many emergency phone calls come in a day and how many people going through some real, really bad stuff. And, you know, we just become so ignorant of it all because we live in such a well-constructed system that we think it's okay to be dumb, fat, and lazy. And I sound like a jerk when I talk like this, right? Like, I know somebody out there is like, oh, this guy's just a jerk. But this is just how I've talked to myself. This is how I treat myself in order to maintain a level of, you know, proficiency, working myself, always trying to realign myself towards my true self.
The truth is the truth, Joe. The truth is the truth. I mean, you can deviate, you can play around with it as much as you want, but the truth is the truth. And people sometimes have a hard time accepting the truth. I think a lot of people don't like to hear it, but the truth is important because it gives you a little bit of a pulse on where you're at. Whether it's good or bad, the truth is the truth. So it's the best. It's the fucking best.
It's the only thing. Yeah, it's the only thing. And what you do with it is going to determine who you are, the quality of your life. You know, that's like the biggest thing is, you know, things don't happen to us. They happen for us. What are you going to choose to do with this pain, this adversity, with this struggle, with this blessing, with this gift, you know, charity, giving, you know, money, 10% tithing, you know, to organizations, because people do go through rough times. Things do happen in this world that fuck people up, but you know, what are you going to do with the things that you're given? You know, that's a really big thing.
Besides being Post's cousin, what is Joe Malone up to now? What do you want to get out there? What messages? What are you up to? Where can they find you if they liked your story?
Yeah, man. You know, it's funny you say that. I got called Post Malone for like 6 months. I didn't even know it was a real person. I thought they were like saying like, because I was on Post, you know, Post.
Anyway. Interesting enough. And you also live in Austin. I believe his first name is Austin.
Oh, that's kind of funny. Right now, what I'm doing is, man, I've tried working with schools. I thought everyone was going to want it, you know, the MARSOC guys, active shooter advice, because quite honestly, dude, like this whole lockdown crap with schools, I don't believe in it. I think it's the worst thing we could be doing when the threat's inside of the building. Kids need to get out. 4 pre-designated rally locations within a couple hundred meters from the school is going to provide incredible life-saving opportunity for teachers, for students, for everybody.
But I digress too.
I'm done. Done trying to work with schools because they've been so difficult and so ignorant and so arrogant. It's drive me crazy. So I just really wanted to get that out there because that was a really big heartbreak for me, man. I've tried to talk to over 50 schools. But I am currently just helping people develop lethality. You know, knowing how to take care of yourself in the most insane of circumstances not only allows you to be self-reliant and allows you to look after what your family and the things that you've accumulated in your life and allows you to look after other people. I call it the blanket of security effect, where if all of us know how to use, key here is know how to and be capable of, not just to flagrantly do this, but if we all know how to use lethal, justified lethal force in defense of ourselves and defense of others, then crime has no place to rear its head. I remember when we used to break into people's sheds and homes and garages, stealing power tools, drug addict kid. The houses with guns, we did not go to because we knew we would get shot. The construction sites with armed guards, we didn't go to because we knew we would get shot. And my goal is to be able to train people to where they can competently and very effectively use firearms in a life-threatening situation, become very situationally aware, you know, through neuroscience and program the subconscious mind, be good at conflict de-escalation techniques, and what that really means. You know, my goal is to teach as many people and train as many people as I possibly can here in the United States of America, because I'm sick of going overseas. I want to make an impact here at home. But if we could all do that, then we could do it for one another. And if we could do it for one another, then violent crime is not going to have a place to rear its head. And on top of that, it develops a lot of confidence and a lot of purpose within people when they know how to, no joke, defend themselves in the worst situations. And so, you know, we build up people's self-confidence. We give them purpose in life, in the workplace or outside of the workplace. I have worked with corporations on this, and I do work with corporations on this, where they provide these programs to their people. But that's what I'm doing, man. I'm just teaching people how to be incredibly lethal so they can preserve incredible peace.
Where can they find you?
Southerncross.company is the website. It's not religious. Southern Cross is a constellation. A lot of people have been hitting me up about the religious thing. I'm a religious dude, but you don't have to be religious if you want to come do some training with us. That's for sure.
Badass. Well, dude, it's been a pleasure having you on. I'm glad that we got connected. And once we end this, I got to hear who your other doppelganger is.
Cool. Appreciate it, man.
Well, thanks, brother.
Guys, if you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you, fret not. We actually have on-demand training at StreetCop.com. You can take that course online right now, and then you could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher, so you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe, at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out StreetCop.com for that offer.